Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at siftedaswheat.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart. Life guarantees us two things, change and loss. Together, they make up the unpredictable rhythm of life. They can also shatter the heart. Death and divorce present us with two of life's greatest changes and losses. They can cause sadness, anger, and confusion. And they can take time to process. Time to figure out who we are again and how we can move on. Today, we're going to talk about how to recover after the death or divorce of a spouse with Dr. Susan Zonnebelt Smingi and Robert DeVeers, authors of Going From We to Me, Embracing Life Again After the Death or Divorce of a Spouse. They offer practical real-life solutions for the decisions faced on the road to recovery. They've written several books together, all of which can be purchased through the Sifted as Wheat website or on Amazon. Susan and Bob, welcome to Heartline.
Thanks so much, Rita. We're delighted to be with you.
Indeed. We're very pleased that you invited us to come today.
Absolutely. Well, grief is a given when we experience loss, but not all losses are the same. Your new book talks about how to move on after death or divorce of a spouse, but how are the two different in terms of recovery?
Well, you know, in some ways they are similar, and that's why we combine them in the book. We point out the differences, but similar is now the people who are divorced or experiencing widowhood have to figure out how they're going to do this solo again. They have to figure out who they are without this partner and really go through a grieving process. The differences, though, is that with a divorce, often it's messy. It's not too common that it's amicable. And so there's a lot of anger and guilt and regret that all has to be dealt with, probably more so than with widowed. Although it's not given that somebody had a perfect marriage or even a close to that when they were married either. But often there's just more things to work through and more things to resolve, as well as the outcome. You know, if there's an ex-spouse and if there's kids, then that has to be dealt with as well.
Yeah, I think with a death, that's more of a concrete loss, a relational loss. And then with divorce, it's more of an abstract thing because you have so many other losses kind of attached to that. And I talk about that in my book, like abstract losses meaning a role loss. I'm no longer a wife. I mean, now that can be true for both. But, you know, there's other things that compound a divorce because you have to still deal with this person, especially if you have children.
Well, if there's children, you know,
yes.
The person still will be alive, probably, hopefully, but, you know, you don't necessarily have to see the person after a divorce unless you have children or there's some connection that you still have to come in contact with that person. Yeah, then you have to figure out how you're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it a little bit more complex in some ways. You know, it's interesting, though, Rita, because we've done a lot of work with both widowed and divorced. But widowed would say at least they have another partner that, if all things are good, that person loves the kids if they have children and can also give some breaks, can do parenting so it's not 100% of the time. Because being a full-time parent all the time, you know, is a tough thing to do without any breaks or any way to have some relief to do some of the things that people have to do individually to grieve and to work through that whole process. So, you know, it's, you know, I guess I would say neither are, you know, none of us want either a divorce or a death of a spouse when we walk down that altar, down to the altar, you know, to get married. We have all these hopes and dreams about how it's going to be, and that really gets ruined, when somebody dies or a marriage breaks up.
What are some first steps to consider when someone is grieving a loss like a death or divorce?
Well, I think, you know, what Susan's been talking about, just give yourself permission to grieve. I think most of us, our human nature is to run away from painful things, to run away from the death or to run away from the divorce or deflect it somehow, to kind of immerse yourself in some other activities and that sort of thing. And I think that that's one of the main things that we want to get across to people who are experiencing a significant loss. That is to say, face it. Go into the pain, because the only way you're going to get through the pain is if you enter into it, and to give yourself permission to grieve. And I think one of the things we tell widowed people, and I think it's applied to divorced people too, is that takes time. It takes intentional time to kind of set time aside in your own personal schedule to say, this is my time to really focus on grieving, to look at memorabilia or to go over the history of my relationship with my spouse, but to begin to name the things. Because, well, as you intimated earlier, grief isn't one big lump sum. It's grieving a thousand different things, role relationships and loss of history and all that sort of thing. And so the main message is, take time to grieve. Give yourself permission to enter into the pain and not run away from it.
Yeah, that's huge, Bob. I think these abstract losses, shattered dreams, unmet expectations, if it's a divorce, maybe loss of trust, loss of hope, loss of faith in people, you know, if there's been a betrayal, those are all things that people need to put words to and begin to feel the pain. And I think denial is a huge barrier to grieving our losses. So what you're saying is really powerful. I think moving people into acceptance is a big part of healing from loss. How do we help people get there?
Yeah, and that really is definitely a process, Rita, because it's, again, you know, from our perspective and our work with divorced people, it's helping them to face the reality. So the more they can do concrete things using their senses, like, you know, like to be involved in the divorce process, to actually go to court, even if you're not the initiator and don't have to show up in court, the more that you can put yourself in situations that you're saying, this is real, this is really happening to me. And, you know, there's all kinds of roles that happen in a divorce. If you're the initiator, you have one whole set of feelings, emotions to deal with. And if you're the recipient, and if you didn't want it, that also is a whole huge different ballywick of things that people have to work through.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's abuse of whatever form, you know, I think that there's a lot to recover from, and then that whole reconstruction of how am I going to put myself back together again, kind of like Humpty Dumpty falling off a wall,
mm-hmm.
you know. I think it's really hard for people then to connect, who am I and how am I going to do this? But, you know, I think that a lot of times people think that it's going to hurt too much if they do the hard stuff,
right.
If they put themselves in positions where, you know, they have to deal with the fact that my life is totally different now that I am divorced and that I don't have a spouse. And the more that can seep through, even to say those hard words, like I'm divorced, and to really journal and figure out what does that mean for me?
Mm-hmm.
How is my life going to be different? What are the holes? And what are the holes that now are positive? Because if it's a divorce, there are a lot of things that people probably had to put up with that they really didn't want to. And
right.
So that's the good part. They don't have to anymore. But, you know, if they were an enabler, they have to change a whole lot. And then there will be some things that they're probably missing that they wish they still had in some ways.
So either way, we're left with two people that are now single.
Right.
And facing that, what does it mean for me to be single, to feel single? How does someone embrace that?
Well, that's a long process, but I think, again, one of the first steps is a lot of self-evaluation, assessment of what I was before I was married. I think a lot of people kind of forget that you haven't been married since the day you were born. You developed a personality independent of that intimate relationship with another person. You had dreams and visions, and get in touch with those and evaluate also what you have learned and gained from that marriage, even if it was a divorce, somehow we really believe there were some positive things that you got from that. And it's really a matter of building one's self-esteem and kind of saying, okay, I'm going to be single. I don't have to consider anybody else anymore. I don't have to compromise with somebody. I want to be comfortable being by myself and to become my own best friend. Now, that sounds very easy, but it isn't, you know.
No.
But I think people simply have to accept the fact that, well, as a matter of fact, in the United States today, there are more unmarried people over the age of 21 than there are married, just slightly. 50.3% of people over the age of 21 in the U.S. today, according to the census, are now unmarried, not married at all. So there's a whole world out there that divorced and widowed people probably aren't aware of because they've lived in a coupled world. But to kind of immerse yourself in the activities that you really like and kind of move into that new normal, as we call it.
Yeah.
You know, as a psychologist, one of the things that, you know, just has been so profound for me is that people really, after a divorce or being widowed, come into therapy and are really feeling so broken. And, you know, if the marriage was at least in some ways a connection, they, you know, it kind of is that whole analogy of two shall become one, and it feels as though part of you is missing. And, you know, how am I now going to do life without that person? Even if it was a negative relationship, that people have, individuals kind of learn how to go around that, and that is the structure of their life. And so when that ends, you know, really even just that phrase of one is a whole number, to really help people to begin to focus on, you know, I maybe don't feel at all complete or whole in myself again, but now that's a process of me starting to work through to figure out how I am going to be. And as Bob was saying, self-esteem is just a really major thing. I mean, even if the marriage was okay for widowed people, self-esteem takes a hit without that other person. And in a divorce, even if the person was negative, at least you were getting some feedback.
Right.
From somebody who lived with you. And, you know, I mean, it sounds kind of ridiculous to say I miss that negative feedback, but, you know, at least it's another voice. And when that person is no longer in your life, that really feels pretty empty and insecure.
Yeah, and I think people are on a journey of self-discovery. I use the pie, call it the pie of life. And generally when people come in with marital problems, their marriage is taking up most of their pie.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love what Bob said about, you know, you got to start expanding the pie. You got to start slicing it up to discover who you are. What are your dreams? What were your goals? What are your passions?
Right.
You got to pull some of that out from the past into the here and now and begin to carve out those slices of the pie with things that God may be calling you to do as an individual. And
right.
I think that's hugely important for the reinvesting of the heart as people move forward after a loss, whether it be a divorce or a death.
Right. You know, and I think that certainly the whole social recognition has shifted from, you know, the whole idea of being single, you know, in the past, decades ago, you know, or even maybe one decade ago,
it was terrible.
Very acceptable,
right,
to be single. It was, you know, it was kind of universally accepted that it is preferable to be married. And yet, you know, I think that for people to really understand that, at least the thinking now has shifted to being single is a very satisfying end state for many people. And, you know, marriage isn't necessarily the ultimate for everybody. Some people are just really better off. They can be more fulfilled. They can pursue some of their interests and gifts in ways that it does complicate it if they're in an intimate marital relationship. And because that takes time and energy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that to be able to accept that, you know, if I stay single for the rest of my life, that still can be a fine, gratifying, fulfilling state for me. And how can I ground myself, at least for a time, even if ultimately that's not what I would hope for myself if somebody comes along? How can I really be content with being single for the time being, at least?
Right.
And to accept that.
I think people, those would be good reasons why people would want to remain single then after a death or divorce.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. You know, there's certainly less risk. You know, you can say, okay, I know what it's like to be married. I've had that experience. You know, now maybe it's my time, my phase of life to really embrace being single. And, you know, I think that as we age, we realize more and more that no matter what state or what issue, there are positives and negatives to everything. And there are definitely positives to being single. Yeah, there's negatives too, but there's positives and negatives to being married as well.
So. Exactly, exactly. I've seen that so much. I've told clients who are single that are lamenting about that. And then I'm like, you know what? People, have what you don't want, you want what you don't have. You get that, and then you're opening a whole other can of worms. And then people get married and come back to me and say, you were right. it's just a different set of problems.
Right. The challenge is to really focus on the positives of where you are,
yes,
where you find yourself, and, you know, to try to live a fulfilling and enjoyable life for yourself as a single, if that's where you are, you know, that it's not a detestable or less an inferior state.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a real shift in thinking for a lot of people who've been married, because most of the time, at least in my experience, people who are married are more concerned about the other person. How am I going to satisfy him or her? How are we going to make our life together good without, you know, focusing on me? And it feels very, very selfish. Some people use that word selfish, or they don't even want to be self-centered. But I think it's very important for us to remember that we are valuable in and of ourselves. We're born independently. We're going to die independently. It's very rare that people die together, and even if they die together, it's not because they both decided to die at the same time. They were probably in an accident, you know.
Right.
So it's important for people to understand that it is not wrong to be self-focused in a kind of a healthy, positive way, that I am valuable, that I'm important, I have gifts and I have skills, and to be able to put that script in your head rather than, you know, I can't do anything now or something like that.
With the death of a person, you know, a loss, a relational loss, a death, there's a degree of closure. With a divorce, a person may still have to be involved with that ex-spouse for years to come, especially if there's children, like we said.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What's the most difficult thing you think that people face in dealing with the grief of divorce?
Oh, I don't know if we can say one thing is the most difficult, but certainly having to deal with the ex. I think most people, you know, if we get a group of people who are divorced and widowed together and let them debate which state is preferable, you know, I think that most divorced people would say, but you know, I wish my ex were dead. I mean, that's not very nice, but it really is the sentiment of a lot of people, because it would be so much easier, you know, especially if there's a lot of conflict and they have to raise kids together, or they have to, you know, have some visitation and the kids get exposed to things that the other spouse doesn't really appreciate or like, or that make it really tough. I think that probably is the biggest for most people, but it's also the fact that a constant reminder that my marriage failed, that the hopes and dreams that I had for, you know, living with somebody who I was in an intimate relationship with until one of us died, and being blissful, that's ended. You know, that's not necessarily very realistic anyway. But, you know, I think most of us have that whole picture or dream in our minds. And you lose a lot of other family members or people that you maybe really cared about with that ex-spouse. You know, probably much more so in many ways than with a death. I mean, when you're widowed, sometimes the family does still come around. Often that's not the case in a divorce.
Mm.
So you lose friends that you had as a couple that maybe you really liked. You know, they eventually, most of them seem to take some side and to have a continuing relationship with one of the people in that divorce situation versus the couple.
How about dating? How do people know if they're ready to date after death or divorce? Are there some guidelines? Because
that's
a lot of people want to jump right in and find somebody else, especially men. Men are more, I'm going to replace the loss type thing.
I wish more people would ask that question, Rita. Like, yeah. Am I? What do I have to do? What has to happen in order for me to be ready to date? I can, you know, and you probably can too. Anybody who does therapy can tell you horror stories of people who, you know, date for the craziest reasons. They're lonely. They don't want to face the pain. All of that kind of thing. You know, it's sure. It's there's a part of it that's kind of fun when somebody's interested in you and that kind of thing. But just a whole can of worms. That go take it away, Bob.
Yeah, but I was going to say, to give very specific things. I mean, we sort of have a rule of thumb that you got to wait at least 1 year before you do anything to get through all the first holidays, the anniversary of the death or the divorce, and that sort of thing. But what we've sort of intimated and been talking about, this whole business of self-assessment, working on one's self-esteem, finding out who you are alone, by yourself, and becoming comfortable with it. Even if you may want to get into another relationship, to get to the point of saying, I don't need it. I can be okay by myself. I may want to be in another relationship, and therefore I'll start dating, but I don't really need that for myself. And so, you know, really encourage people to be very, very slow and careful and safe. The other thing we do really, really recommend is that, I hate to say it like this, but you're going shopping. You got a shopping list when you go to the store. You know what you're looking for when you want to buy a car. When you're dating, have a list of criteria, deal breakers. This person has to have these qualities or these characteristics, or I'm not even going to give that person a second look.
That's awesome.
Then don't give that person a second look. Let your brain control what you're doing. This is not the adolescent hormones racing through your body anymore, though I might add that sometimes feels like that. But allow your head to take the lead and say, all right, this is the type of person I want. I want somebody who has the same value system. I want somebody who has the same belief system. I may want to have somebody who has the same educational level. I want somebody who's not smoking or whatever. I mean, but put that criteria list down and then see who might fit that.
And follow through.
And
you
follow
know,
through
what I often will tell clients is they say, yeah, you know, the first few times I know that I heard some things that I didn't really like, but, you know, I liked a lot of other things, so I just kind of let it go, and before they know it, they've spent 6 months or a year in that relationship and now have a lot of things that they really have been connected with that person about, and it's even harder, but those things that they were objectively not liking initially are still there, and they become more prominent. And then, you know, it hurts. The more you attach, the more it hurts to end a relationship that you know is unhealthy for you. The only other thing I would add to Bob's list, I mean, there's a lot, but the significant one is that people are through grieving before they start dating. And, you know, that is a really hard one for people, and you know, the most classic one I've seen is somebody who got married, went on their honeymoon, came back home, and all the memorabilia and stuff were still there because the person didn't want the divorce and couldn't part with that stuff that the person had just left, hadn't taken everything. And, you know, the new wife didn't particularly like that at all and started cleaning it up, and there was a huge conflict over that. So, you know, you can't start dating to try to work through the grieving from a divorce or a death. You have to really do that work on your own and be able to put that relationship in the past, be able to say, okay, this is the end of this marriage. Even with a divorce, even though the ex is still around, I really think, you know, it's just a whole different ball game of how you're going to deal with the ex, but you got to detach all those emotions that were there from the marriage before you can really handle that person in a new light.
I know we're sort of running on this one, Rita, but there's one other little thing that I really would like to say about this, and to help people understand that getting into a new relationship is more of a consequence of what you're doing in your life and not necessarily a goal. If you live your life according to your own interests and your own activities, and you really invest in life and you're feeling good about yourself, you may likely run into somebody who matches that. And as a consequence of your reinvesting in life, you may find another life partner. I think it's those people who make it a goal, who literally are out shopping, you know, really miss something. And that's where I think a lot of the mistakes come in and a lot of the bad decisions.
Bob, that's a great point. Absolutely a great point.
I see so many people that are doing that, and I think, A, you're saying you have to get healthy before you do this, and
right,
two,
exactly,
you're leaving God out of the equation if you're making
right
it a goal.
Yep.
Right, right.
And I think where people get hung up is they're lonely, and it's easy for them to rush into dating or remarriage, and then they find themselves in a hot mess. And so what are some of the pitfalls that you guys see that people need to be aware of in terms of that dating? I mean, obviously, sexual temptation and sexual sin is a big part of that.
Right.
Anything else?
Well, you know, I guess I would first say, you know, go about finding somebody as you live life, and don't make it a goal that you have to get married. I have a number of people in, through the years that have come to my office saying, so how do I find a man, particularly women, but because there's many more available women than there are men. The ratio is not even. So, you know, I think that to really say loneliness, we can be very lonely in a relationship. I mean, people who've been divorced hopefully can attest to that. I mean, there's lack of intimacy, a lack of connection, being on the same wavelength, viewing each other as kindred souls. I mean, when the marriage is breaking up, there isn't that harmony. So was that not lonely?
Yeah.
And, you know, to really start redefining lonely and finding ways not to be lonely.
Well, guys, we're out of time. I'm so sorry I could talk forever with you about this. Thank you so much for being with us. Tell us how folks can get in touch with you if they have questions, or they can get the book on my website, but any other information, you're speaking, if they want you to speak.
Well, yeah, we do a lot of speaking nationally. We go all over the United States and actually in Canada. The best way to reach us, I think, would be through email. And if people have their pencil ready, it's really our initials. It's S as in Sam, Z as in Zebra, S as in Sam, R as in Robert, D as in David, V as in Victor. So that's SZSRDV at S as in Sam, B as in Bravo, C as in Charlie, and then the word global, G-L-O-B-A-L, .net, SBCglobal.net. And we'd love to have people email us if they have questions, and we're happy to respond to those, or if they want to investigate more workshop kinds of things or presentations, we'd be very happy to talk with them.
Great. Thank you guys so much for being with us today. God bless you and all you do.
Thank you, Rita. We've enjoyed it very much.
Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at siftedaswheat.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.